I would like to introduce our main speaker.
And now I'd like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Ken from San Diego.
Hi, everybody. Ken, alcoholic. Glad to be here in front of you, sober, alive, and kicking. Just have to breathe for a minute. It's, butterflies have been going all day. You know, I had my speech all figured out at 7:30 this morning, and it'll probably change. Congratulations, Damon and Liz. Red hair, there we go. Okay. I love that lady. I've known her for quite some time, you know, and we've done some things together, and we've done some camping and stuff, and she's, you know, I used to be afraid of her, and, but once I got to know her, I learned to love her, and she's who she is, and I'm who I am, and that's, you know, that's what we do here. Welcome to the six newcomers that I counted tonight, and our one visitor from Arizona. Welcome. Where do we start? Kind of grew up in a normal family, if we want to get to the basics, you know. Grew up with a normal family till about 10. Dad got booted out, and I became a rebel. I became, there was no more whoopings with belts anymore. There was no more coat hangers. It was all about, you know, mom's not going to hit me because I'm as big as she is, you know. And so I could just run, and that's pretty much what I did from age 10. I didn't start drinking and doing all that stuff, you know, when I was 6 or 7 because I had a normal childhood. But once Dad left, I, you know, just, I don't know, just, it was on. You know, I felt some freedom and the fear was gone of being, what do you want to call it, being punished. There was no more punishment involved. And so I did that, and I don't know if there's any Pat Travers, Blue Oyster Cult, or Cheap Trick fans out here. That's my generation. but there was a concert at Qualcomm Jack Murphy Stadium, and that was my experience of drinking jugs of clear stuff and waking up, and the concert was pretty much over. And that was my first experience with alcohol at that level. Then it became going out to the desert and drinking Brown Derby and trying to figure out what the bottle cap said. You know, it had those little puzzles under the bottle caps. Because my buddy's dad would get like three cases of them, and we'd go out there for a couple days, and that's what we did, was drink Brown Derby and try to ride motorcycles. And we moved to, I was born in Hawaii, but I pretty much lived in East San Diego, went to Horace Mann Junior High. That wasn't like a proud moment of my life, but I did that, and a lot of fighting, a lot of stuff going on at that school, and I always tried to stay away from that. I always, you know, just wanted to just hang out with a couple kids, and that was it. And moved to San Carlos right up the hill up here, and at age 14, and got a bike and found out what a rec center was all about. And a rec center was a place to go, you know, fish for beer and go get some pot and just hang out, and that was my Friday night. It started out to be Friday nights, then it turned into Saturday nights, Friday and Saturdays. And then it turned out to be Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays. And after a while, about 16, you know, it became pretty much a nightly thing. It was fish for beer and try to get some pot and escape and not have to just deal with anything. You know, I was just a rebel. I just was on the loose, and nobody was there to punish me, and so on and so forth. And I'm just moving through this kind of quick. But at the age of 18, I got my first. They were 502s when I was growing up. Now they're Deweys or something. I don't know what they're called. But but I had my first one at 18, and they slapped me on the wrist, and they said, "Don't do it again." I said, "Okay, sure." So I went on about my way. And I got another one at age 20. So I had two before I was old enough to drink. And alcohol pretty much did for me what I couldn't do for myself. And, you know, come to find out, this AA, after being here for a while, that's what AA does. It does for me what I can't do for myself. And So anyway, backing up a couple years, at 18, I went to Louisiana because my mom figured that a change of scenery was good. So went off to Dad's in Louisiana. And I took me with me, so it was pretty much... I had to be a little bit more conspicuous, a little more on the down low, but I could find them. I could find the people that had what I wanted, and I did. And the only place that I knew where you could do drive-through margaritas, it was like absolutely awesome. We used to take trips to New Orleans and stuff like that from Baton Rouge. And you just always stop by the margarita little drive through and pick one up. And, you know, as long as it was in a plastic cup, it was okay. And that's their logic. Came back. That lasted about 8 months, 9 months. I couldn't deal with Dad anymore. He was starting to put the foot down. We almost got in a brawl. So, Mom, come get me, you know. And so she did. And I moved back home and I got sober in 1988. I was 24 years old. But I got in, once I got back from there and I got my second 502, I started to hang around with some pretty shady characters. And it was, you know, dry goods, they call it. Whatever you want to call it, it was on. And as long as I didn't do the H word, I wasn't a dope fiend. You know, I had it figured out. I knew I had a problem, but as long as I wasn't doing that stuff, I didn't have a problem with drugs. And I did. But the common denominator through my whole life was that there was alcohol under every sip, every toke, every whatever I did, there was alcohol. So I started getting into some pretty nasty stuff, and I hit my bottom at age 24 in a bathroom because I was looking on the ground for some stuff I thought I dropped, and I don't know if any of you can relate to that. We don't have any fellow tweakers in here, do we? But anyway, back to alcohol. I had hit a bottom, and I asked my boss, because I saw a guy go out, and he went out to treatment, and he came back a different guy. I was working in a press room. I've worked in press rooms since I was 18 years old. And so at 24, I saw this guy leave, and I knew he was just as bad as I was. And he came back to work. He was gone for like 2 or 3 months, and he came back to work. And there was something different about him. He was smiling, and he had a glow about him. And I'm like, damn, what happened to him? And I asked him. I said, what happened to you? Where you been? And he says, I went to treatment. I got sober. You know, I'm sober like whatever, 58 days, whatever, whenever they kicked him out. And I'm like, damn, that sounds different, you know, because I didn't know how to be sober. I didn't even know what sober was. When I was a kid, I remember seeing those commercials with, you know, Ed holding the candle, you know, and saying he was an alcoholic, and over here is Judy holding the candle saying she was an alcoholic, not our Judy, different Judy. But, I mean, I remember that commercial, and that's what kind of like, you know, I'm like, you know, it put a label to what was wrong with me, is that, you know, I had a drinking problem and maybe I was an alcoholic. So I asked my boss if he could send me off to that treatment center that he went to. And he said, yeah, and he made the phone call right there in front of me. I mean, it was on. And Rose, the lady that was she was in charge up there. She said, well, you're going to have to wait a week or so till we can get a bed available for you. And my boss says, well, you got to wait about a week, so just don't do nothing for a week and we'll get you up there. It got worse than the bathroom floor, trust me, for that week. It was pretty bad. And anyway, they made that phone call. They called my house. They had my number. So it was on, you know. We were off to Rancho Labrie up in Dulzura, California. And back when they had pigs and horses and you slopped them and that was your job up there. But on my way, my former wife, I call him former, X is so negative. Ha ha ha. Peter. Anyway, we were getting in the Mustang. We were getting ready to go up the big hill, you know, and I remember I had one joint left, and I had a couple beers in the fridge, so I pounded those down on the way up there because I didn't know how to. I was afraid. I was scared. I didn't know what I was in for. I had no clue of what treatment was about, what AA was about. I had no clue of anything, and so I went up there, and thank God I had insurance because otherwise I wouldn't have been able to. Needless to say, from the day after. That was April 9th, 1988, that we drove up. April 10th has been my sobriety date since 1988. And I stayed there for 4 months, and I had some really good insurance. I think that's why my buddy went there, because it was, you know, it wasn't going to cost him anything. And he came back, and he got healthy, and, you know, I haven't seen him since. But it's just, you know, it happened. It was on for 4 months. I was up there. I learned how to read. I learned how to write. I learned how to write about stuff that went on in my life and be able to look at it, you know, what my part was in some shit, because everything was always your guys' fault. All of a sudden, I'm writing stuff down, and my therapist, I called him the rapist, it's spelled the same. They're messing with stuff. You know, he'd just point out some stuff to me, and I'd have to just take a look at it, you know. And me being the good alcoholic, didn't want to take a look at it. But, you know, because I think when I went in there, I just wanted to get off the dry goods and stay on the wet goods when I got out. And, but he made that observation that, Ken, everything you do, you're drinking. Everything you do, you're drinking, whether it's gin or whiskey, whatever it is, beer, everything you do, you're drinking. And, well, maybe I'm an alcoholic then. And that was like the big revelation in 4 months that I could be like everybody else, you know, because I always had to be different for something. I always had to be different. And maybe I am like other people. Maybe there's a little hope for this guy. So I came in on the Vans. Welcome to all the people that come in on Vans. I love the Vans. It gave me a time to shop. It gave me a time to go meet people, stick my hands out. And we looked forward to it every Friday night. You know, it was like the shit. You know, we got to go out. Because all they served there was decaf. So we got to drink regular coffee, get wired out of our gourd, and then go back and stay up until, you know, whatever, till 11 o'clock. But to me, having like 4 months, that was fun, you know. After going through what I went through, you know, doing that was fun. And then I got out of there and I went into a recovery home for another 4 months, and it was right by where I grew up on Michael Street in East San Diego, and it was the Heartland House. I went there and I got a sponsor, and I went to Easy Does It speakers meeting, and all these places where the Van took me. Those were the places that I hung out, because I'd been there, and we kept going back, and I'd see familiar faces. And I got a sponsor at the Easy Does It speakers meeting, and his name was Jeff. And he was my first sponsor, and we went through the steps and until we got to 9. Then I went to the grand sponsor and for some issues. You know, it's been on ever since. When I was out there doing my deal, drinking and doing my other stuff, I don't think I was responsible enough to get married, to have kids, you know, to do stuff on my own. I, you know, it was all about me, and it took getting sober to be able to get married, to be able to have kids. I have a boy that's soon to be 22 here in a couple of weeks, and my daughter's 19, and my boy's he'll be coming up on 2 years sober here pretty soon now. That stuff that I swore that, you know, I didn't have a problem with, so I wasn't one of them, that's what he got stuck on. And that's tough stuff, you know. You know, when they start robbing you blind at your own home and stuff like that, it's time to kick them out and give them a little tough love, because I'm babying them too much, you know, like giving them that comfort zone that it's okay to come home and steal from dad and stepmom. And once I found out he was stealing from her, he was gone. So his other choice was to go get help, and he did. And he's been up in L.A., up in a recovery home up in Torrance for like the last 18 months, and 19 months. And What a deal. Every time I go up there, it's just awesome. You know, I can't talk about my kids enough. I love them to death. You know, my daughter, she's 19, and she's been through a lot of crap, and I'm there with her every step of the way. Me and Nikki are, and all my friends are with me when I go to be with her. You know, she was talking about my grandson dying. That was back in July, and his birthday was in September. That's like the two, three toughest months I think I've gone through. And, you know, it's a direct result of having a lot of friends and to be able to support me, because I can sit there and pray and talk to something that, you know, I don't understand. I know he works, you know, as a direct result of taking the steps, I have an understanding, but to get the immediate effect that I'm looking for when I'm hurting and I'm in a deep pile of shit, you know, I get on my knees, I pray that it's not gone, it's still there, but to get a hug from somebody, you know, to get a I love you from somebody, there's nothing more in the world that means anything more than I'm not alone. Because when I'm praying, I'm kind of alone. You know, I'm kind of alone with myself. And I can just sit there and bullshit God all I want, but I can't bullshit my friends. You know, the emotions are in my face, they're on my sleeve. And whether I'm hurting or I'm happy, you know, they're on my sleeve. And, what else has happened in sobriety? I know back when I first got sober, we'll jump back a little bit, I was very trusting, you know, it was all good, you know, life's good, blah, 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 you know, just like on this pink cloud bouncing around. And some guy comes up to me down at a sobriety house down there on 1111 Island and says, you know, I could get you a TV and VCR for $200. And I'm just like trusting, you know, just full blown, just like, what a deal. And, so I talked to my former wife and I say, well, what do you think? It's only $200 TV and a VCR and we really need one. We don't have one. And, she's like, okay. So we take this guy and put him in the back of the car and go to the ATM, take out $200 and he drives us right down Imperial Avenue. And, he just says, wait here, you know, I'll be right back. So anyway, I gave him the $200 and like 15 minutes went by. I said, back then, honey, I think we should go. This is kind of scary sitting here this long. And she's like, I want our $200 back. And I go, get in the car. We're leaving, you know. She was going to go kick his ass, I guess. Or, oh, sorry. Oh, that was a three-letter word. He said no four-letter words. Anyway, that was my first experience at not everything is wonderful once you get here and you're on that pink cloud. There's still people out there that are willing to, you know, to hurt you and take advantage of you. And you know, so in other words, life is on, you know. And I learned a lesson, you know, the hard way, but I learned it. And that's one thing great about this program is I can keep learning the same lesson as long as I'm willing to endure the pain. You know, losing $200 hurts a lot. Back then. Where are we? I want to just kind of stick to the steps because I went through with my sponsor and like I mentioned that I went through the 9th step with my grand sponsor and there's a little story behind that, but we went through the first 8 together and he hadn't experienced the 9th step, my first sponsor. So that's why he sent me to his grand sponsor, my grand sponsor, because you cannot give away something you don't have. So I went to my grand sponsor and crusty old guy, you know, I mean, just freaking old and, like Allah kind of guy. No, not one of these guys. different crusty old guy. But his name was Norman very wise man, and I'm sitting at Denny's just shaking out of my boots. I got like 8 months, you know, and he's got like 100 years. And we went through a process of the amends list, and you're supposed to make a list of all the stuff you stole, blah, 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 add it up, blah, 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 do all this stuff, and I did, and my question to him was, well, you know, if I go back to Mayfair Market back when I was 11, you know, and pay him for all the freaking caps that I stole for the cap gun. You know, I said, what do I do about that? And he's like, well, you know, you're not doing anybody any service if you're in jail. You know, because they might throw you in the slammer. So how much money do you make an hour back then? $10 an hour. How much money do you owe? $800 or $1,000, whatever it was. And he said, well, divide that by how much you make an hour, and that's how much community service you get to do. I wouldn't ever have thought of that, you know. Take a guy with 100 years to figure that out, not me. So I did a lot of community service on Saturdays, and it took about 3 months to get it all taken care of. But I did it, you know. And as far as, you know, going through 10, 11, and 12, my first sponsor did get drunk, and you know, God bless his soul, he's back in the program now, you know, and that's awesome. But now I have a new sponsor. And I get to call him, and it's long-distance sponsorship, but it's okay. He's there. He picks up the phone every day. You know, it's what an ordeal. I don't know. My wife was absolutely drop-dead gorgeous up here, and I was just kind of in awe, you know. I love her, you know. And, Oh, thanks. But, you know, I just, where we came from, you know, where we started and where we're at today. You know, anyway, what happened? I already told you that, what it used to be like. I told you about that and what it's like today. I have 24 years or 23 and a half years to tell you what it's like today. But they only give me another 15 minutes to do it. And I just wanted to mention that I go to a meeting on Monday night, Rule 62, which is don't take yourself so damn serious. That was a four-letter word. And there was an old-timer there. He's got 47 years. He would have 52, but he had one bad night. And he went to go be with his kids on Wednesday. And that meeting's going to miss him a lot. You know, he always told the same story every night. Different jokes, different punchlines. But the message was always the same. You don't drink. Taking the steps, part of it is recognition. And he always brought that up, that it's about recognition. You know, when my defects of character are flying, as long as I recognize it, I can do something. If I don't recognize it, I'm on a rocket, you know. And probably going down more this way than up that way. But, you know, he's going to be sorely missed. And Nikki was talking about my grandson that passed away, that he drowned in his own backyard. You know, if I was drinking, I tell you what, I certainly wouldn't have been there at the hospital. I certainly wouldn't have been there hearing my daughter scream, Daddy, I love you. I wouldn't have been able to pick him up and kiss his forehead, being ice cold. I wouldn't have been able to do that stuff. Without having a God in my life that I understand, I wouldn't have been able to do that stuff. Without you guys, I wouldn't have been able to do that stuff. You know, you make one phone call, you're at the hospital, you got all this shit going on. You make one phone call, and all of a sudden you got six friends around you there to... whatever you need, you know, that's what they're saying. Whatever you need, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? And it just doesn't get any better. I can't explain it. You have to experience it. Take the steps. Get a sponsor. Go to a lot of meetings if you're new. You know, it's just it's one of those things that it's just called love, basically. You know, God is love, and as long as I'm doing loving actions, I guess I'm kind of being spiritual. If I'm being an ass, then I'm not being too spiritual. I keep looking at the guy over here. It's still a three-letter word. What else? You know, I got all this group from here from Thursday night, the Great Fact Group. If you want to know where it's at, it's right there. There's little flyers printed up on the seats. Right there, yeah, there they are. If you don't know what it means, there it is. I don't know, I'm kind of running out of steam, getting real sweaty. Haven't taken one drink of water yet, and I'm okay. I want to tell you one story, and then we'll call it quits. My boy, he's up in L.A., and he knew I was speaking tonight, and he'd rather had nothing more than be able to come down and listen to his dad speak. But he has to work. He's actually got a job. He bought his own car. You know, he's doing the deal. He's taking the steps. He's got a sponsor. He's just doing the deal. And I said, so can you come down Saturday night? You know I'm speaking. And he's like, yeah, but I got to work. I go, okay, well, how about if we send you a CD? He said, well, I got my phone. I could listen to it on the internet. So hi, Kevin, if you're out there. just blew his anonymity at Home Depot, though. But he's all, just send me a CD. I'd love to hear it. Okay, you know, it kind of melts my heart. He wants to hear what his dad has to say. So he says, oh, but by the way, Tuesday night up here at the recovery home is speaker CD night. And I said, yeah, what's that mean? He's all, don't suck. He said, don't suck, you better be good, because everybody's going to hear it. And I said, okay, I'll do my best. Thanks, son. And he's a good kid, and my daughter's a great daughter, and I have lots of good friends. I have a great mom, got a great family, got a wonderful wife, and I love you, honey. I don't know where else to go. I know it's kind of early. We can all go to Coco's and get some pie. Thanks.